The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to Ice Time, the Buffalo News Hockey Podcast. I'm Lance Lysowski, Sabres beat writer for the Buffalo News, joined as always by Mike Harrington. And we're coming down the wire, Mike. Five more games as we speak here on Thursday afternoon. I'm in Columbus. They're playing the Blue Jackets tonight. Sabres have won five in a row. They've won eight out of their last nine. And I mean, they're officially eliminated from the playoffs. That happened on Tuesday, despite their win over the Carolina Hurricanes, a really complete win. I mean, to shut out that team, the Hurricanes looked like a shell of themselves, honestly. But it's been interesting to hear the fan base's reaction. You know, some people are obviously frustrated that this didn't start sooner and that this team, you know, clearly has beaten some of the best in the league, yet they're going to miss the playoffs for a 14th year in a row. And it's led to another side of the conversation, which is fans who are upset they are winning because they want a higher draft pick. Mike, I'll leave the floor. I'll give you the floor to share your thoughts on that viewpoint.
You're really going to set me up right off the top. We're just going to plow right into this, Lance.
Well, let's get into it.
I am thoroughly disgusted in a lot of ways because the goal of any game in any sport is to win. And we saw 10 years ago, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the famous lottery. We saw how devastating tanking can be for an entire organization when you strip things down to the studs like the Sabres did. They didn't get Connor McDavid. They failed to build properly around Jack Eichel. And here we are 10 years later. But you now have a team with, you know, legitimate NHL players, Thompson, Tuck, Paterka, Dahlin, Byram. You can go down the list. Some of them are more accomplished than others. And for fans to be upset that this team has won eight out of its last nine and 13 out of its last 15 at home and seven in a row at home for the first time since 1999. For people to be mad about that because it's screwing up their draft pick, screwing up what order they're going to take the latest 18-year-old, and I don't care how good any of these guys are, I just don't even know what the thought process is of people here. This fan base is so poisoned by what happened 10 years ago, thinking that all we got to do is hit the top of the draft and we're good to go when, hello, yeah. Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhart, Rasmus Dahlin, Owen Power, they've had four picks at one or two since 2014. It's just not what it is. The draft is a component for winning. The draft is not the only source of winning. You still have to make trades. You still have to work in free agency, and you have to develop the players you draft, whether they're in round one or round seven, like a guy like Tyson Kozak. The idea that this is some quick fix panacea and the Sabres are screwing it up by winning is just the most absurd thing I've ever seen. Would you rather the Sabres be the New York Rangers right now and be completely checked out of the season and not showing any effort, not showing any care about how they're playing, which is how the New York Rangers are playing? Or would you like to see the Sabres play like this? And don't tell me other teams are taking the night off against them, because these other teams need points. Vegas needed the points. Edmonton needed the points. Carolina didn't really need the points, but they've played pretty well, actually, against the Sabres. This list of teams the Sabres have beaten, most of these teams need the points. So I'm just thoroughly dismayed, shocked, disgusted. I don't understand where all people have done is complain they've been losing. I'm canceling my tickets because they never win. Well, now all they're doing is winning and everybody's mad. I don't get it.
It is partially out of the tanking mindset, going back to, yes, the Eichel Reinhart years, but it's also football thinking. It's that, oh, we can get a day one. If we pick in the top five, we can get somebody who's going to be on the team next year. That's right. Not how it works. Mike, go back to the 2020 draft. Guess who's fourth among all the players drafted in 2020? Guess who's fourth in goals and points? JJ Paterka. He's picked 34th overall. Okay. Yeah. It's not about how high you pick. It's about who you pick and how you develop them. and look at the list of prospects in this draft. I mean, I haven't done my deep dive into it because we don't have to worry about the scouting combine quite yet. We're still weeks away from that whole aspect, but nobody is coming in here and saving the day. You're not getting Porter Martone to come in here and score 40 goals, Mike. You're not getting Hunter Schaefer to come in here and be the D partner that Owen Power has needed for the last 3 years. No, what you're getting is another teenager who's going to need several years to become a real impact player like the ones that you just mentioned, whether it be Thompson, Dahlin, or Tuck. That is not what this team needs right now. If anything, and we're going to have that conversation again, I know, in the weeks to come, is that they need to trade that pick.
Right.
They
need more adults in the room than not another 18-year-old.
They do not need picks. This franchise has needed a direction. This team needed a direction. This team needed an identity, and they have finally forged that over the last month or so to where you can finally sit here and say, wow, okay, this is what they're going to look like under Lindy Ruff, and this is how he wants them to win. Because for months, yes, you saw it for one night, you saw it for one period here or there, usually the first period, but now we're starting to actually see a semblance of consistency, Mike, that we haven't seen, and you could argue, I mean, years, because even in 22-23, when they finished with 91 points, how wildly inconsistent were they in that year?
And everybody's saying, we've seen this before. The pressure's off. They go win at the end of the season. Well, that's kind of become a fan narrative. It's not true. They haven't done it at the end of every season. But people remember the rush in 22-23 where they almost made the playoffs. And that really, that style, they weren't really good defensively.
No.
They weren't all that responsible. Granato didn't really have a system. What you see this year with Ruff, why is this different? Why can this translate? This can translate because there's structure. There's a plan. They understand their roles. And the other thing, and I've asked a couple players this week, and we even asked Ruff this, they're scoring a ton of goals right now. With a power play, it's still lousy. And the other thing, though, they're doing this without cheating for offense. They're scoring a ton of goals. They're not cheating. They're responsible. Look at that game against Carolina the other night. They waited 22 minutes in a scoreless game before they opened the scoring and got a lead. They didn't get impatient. They didn't make, you know, unhealthy decisions with the puck to try to push for offense. They waited until they got an opening. Thompson took it. And that's a level of maturity we haven't seen. We don't know if this is going to translate to October. We know this style, if they replicate it, can translate to October.
Yeah, I don't believe that momentum can be carried over from one season to the next. We've asked players that about that particular point the last few years. I remember Kyle Okposo in particular, because this is something that the Sabres have done in the past, where they finish strong and doesn't matter. And I think it does matter because they need to eradicate the bad habits that have been carved out over the last couple of years. Those high-risk passes, getting bored playing the right way, which is, the, I believe, the way that Tage Thompson has framed it time and again, where you get bored because you know how skilled you are, you know you're capable of scoring goals, and it's getting that itch during a game that you want to open it up when, in fact, you just need to play smart and the offense is going to come. So and the fact that
– oh, sorry.
Here's no, you can make your point.
One other point on this. Have you heard or seen a toxic culture and a toxic atmosphere in KeyBank Center at all lately? No. Because they've won 7 in a row, because they're 13-2 in their last 15 at home, they're not getting booed every night. Having a positive culture at home is a massive issue with this franchise, and they have it now because why? Because the people there are happy that the team is winning and playing well. That's important. That's why you want to keep winning games whenever you play.
I've been impressed with the way that, you know, you go back to the Boston game where they started, that first period, they made a lot of the mistakes that we've been accustomed to seeing, bad turnovers, irresponsible plays, but they corrected it mid-game and then won. That is what was missing from this group earlier this season, and it's obviously something they're going to have to carry over into the future. Next topic, Mike.
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
Tage Thompson. Imagine how many – we would be talking about possibly 60 goals if this team had a functional power play. He's close to 50 as we sit here on Thursday. He has 44 goals and 71 points. And, I mean, the fact is, you look at the 5-on-5 production is – I don't know if people understand how special this season is for Thompson and what he's doing. He's average, He's produced 1.97 goals per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. That is the highest mark by any player since the NHL began to track 5-on-5 ice time in 2007.
He's got 36 goals at 5-on-5.
Yep.
Leon Draisaitl has what, 32?
Yeah.
He's far and above ahead. And here's something else. Obviously, he's helping the Sabres win. Tage Thompson is proving Bill Guerin to be a complete fool for not having him on the Four Nations Club. Tage Thompson right now is putting himself in the middle of all the talk for the Olympic team for next year already. I think Tage Thompson probably needs, and I think he will, assuming he's healthy, he needs to go play for Team USA at the World Championships. And he needs to just show them that he can play at an international level, because one of the reasons he didn't get picked at the Four Nations is he's never been in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Rightly or wrongly, that was a big mark against Tage Thompson. He's playing so well now. He's one of the best players in the league right now. He is one of the best scorers. He's a unicorn at that size. He needs to show them that he can fit in to a role. And I think right now Tage Thompson is playing himself onto the Olympic team next year. And now you're looking at 2 45-plus goal seasons in the last three. So now people can't say that 47-goal season was an outlier or a lucky product of analytics, because he's done it twice in 3 years.
And he's done it this year while playing not only center but right wing. That's two different positions. And you've seen him take another step in terms of the details away from the puck, the defending, the effort. I know that that's something that Lindy Ruff has pointed out, that, yes, he came – when Lindy Ruff returned as coach, he knew that Tage Thompson could score. But – he didn't know exactly the overall package Tage Thompson could bring to them in terms of his effort defensively. And it's just all the little things in his game that have finally come together to where, in my opinion, this season of 40 goals is far more impressive to me than what we saw 2 years ago. Just the way that he's scoring goals, it's not just perimeter, it's not just power play. He's scoring. It's not easy to score at 5-on-5 in this league, let alone to do it as much as he has.
But here's the other story. You bring up the point of moving from center to the right wing. Well, if you've paid him $7.1 million to be your number one center, and now he's going to be your number one right wing, okay. Well, you traded for Josh Norris. The idea is that Josh Norris could be the center for Tage Thompson. Well, Mr. Norris has to come to training camp healthy in September. And that's going to be a big question mark, because we're getting to the end here. Do we really think they're suddenly going to throw Josh Norris into a game here in the last week of the season? Can't see that happening. So you're going to probably have Josh Norris play 3 games for the Buffalo Sabres after that trade. So he needs to be ready to go come September, because if Tage Thompson is going to be a winger, Josh Norris is your number one center.
Or it's Jiří Kulík.
Well,
the way that Kulík is played, especially in the D zone.
Can you do that at that age? Maybe you can, but it's certainly going to be one of those things. You're going to have to see it in training camp.
Yep.
See it a little more the rest of the season, see it in training camp. I think, you know, contract wise, Norris is making $7.9 million. They're thinking he's the guy, but Kulík could take it. I mean, a huge reason they put Thompson at the wing was, well, we can put Kulík at center up there and he can survive. And you didn't think in September that would be the case. And it became the case in the second half of this season.
They've made it clear that they really want to see a left-handed center playing with Tage Thompson, which I believe also contributed to maybe them targeting Norris, because they see him as a perfect fit. We'll see. I'm not going to write off Norris. It's unfortunate the injury happened. It's not great. Clearly, it's frustrating from for fans to see Dylan Cousins headed to the playoffs and Josh Norris play only 3 games. But in the end, the skill set makes sense. He has a lot of what they are looking for in terms of leadership, the special teams, all situations. We'll see what it looks like once he finally gets the opportunity to play with Tage Thompson on a regular basis. I'm going to pivot, Mike, and you mentioned Tuck. I think that this guy deserves recognition for, he's not going to be up for the Selkie, and so much of that is the team that he's on and what they
should be.
But he should be with everything that he has done. And I think that he is one of the more underrated players in the league, underappreciated, in my opinion. Because he hasn't been back in the playoffs since he was in Vegas. You look at what he's done in terms of takeaways, the block shots, the penalty killing. he has just been dynamite. And again, he is, I think he's been even better, and I would say by a mile, than he was 2 years ago.
Yeah, he's leading the league in shorthanded goals with 6. I think he's 4 or 5 block shots away from the most block shots by a forward since they started tracking the stat 20 years ago in NHL history. He is fearless in that area. The takeaways, Lindy talks all the time about, you know, the fast stick and how he seems to be very tight on the puck all the time. And these teams know that, and they still put the puck in dangerous areas where Tuck can intercept it, and off he goes down the ice. And he does it over and over again. He's really one of the best we've ever seen at it. And that's the thing, too, is that Alex Tuck has created, has scored 34 goals. When he creates these opportunities for himself, he has excellent finishing ability. He's not putting the puck into the glass on a breakaway here. He's scoring goals. And again, you had to say to yourself, Tuck had 36 goals and 83 points a couple of years ago. Was it a mirage? Was it a one-time thing? It was a career year. Well, here he goes again. Now he might pass 36 goals this year. That means 2 out of 3. So when you start getting 2 out of 3 years like that, it becomes last year as the outlier. The bad year is the outlier. And that's what the Sabres are hoping for here. They've had 2 out of 3 good years from 2 of their marquee guys. And you're right. I mean, they're both improving defensively. And there's no question in my mind he won't be. Tuck should be in the top 5 of the Selke voting for the best defensive forward in the league. If the Sabres were a playoff team, he would be because, you know, to me, look at Sam Reinhart, who's really become terrific defensively. Well, excuse me, he became this big Selke trophy candidate as soon as he got to the Florida Panthers. Why? Because people saw his elite play in games that mattered, in games down the stretch. They don't count in the voting, but people remember that for future years. That's how Barkov finally cracked the Patrice Bergeron cycle and became a perennial Selke trophy guy. You know, that's the thing. Tuck doesn't have that on his resume from Vegas. The Sabres need to make the playoffs for Thompson to get recognition, for Darlene to break the top 5 of the Norris. And he's getting pretty close, by the way, on that area too. But until they start winning, until they start getting in the playoffs, their guys aren't going to get that kind of recognition.
He should get recognition, Tuck, that is, in terms of the Olympic team next year. You go back to 4 Nations. We saw Bill Guerin pick role players for his fourth line, like Trocheck, Brock Nelson. Don't you think that Alex Tuck would be a little bit better fit, especially on Olympic ice with his speed, his size, what he can do defensively?
No, I was heavily anti-Brock Nelson, and I was heavily anti-Vincent Trocheck, and I'm right about Trocheck. Brock Nelson's played really well.
Yes, he has.
Since he got out of Long Island and got to Colorado. But could you imagine in the Olympics next year, a fourth line where Brock Nelson is the center and Alex Tuck is on his wing? It'd be a dynamite fourth line. You could really shut down other teams. You could get some offense. I mean, people forget here because of what they've seen from the Sabres over the years. Other teams' fourth line score. They put the puck in the net. It really hasn't been the case in Buffalo over the last few years, but they do, and especially in an elite tournament like the Olympics. Everybody has to score. Everybody has to have that ability, and they have to be able to play a different role than they're used to, as we saw with Dylan Larkin this year for Team USA. So Alex Tuck would be a prototype Olympic fourth-line guy, but, you know, they have most of their guys already picked, I think. There's really only a couple spots that are going to be open here in that forward group, and can he break through? And would Team USA really take 2 Buffalo Sabres breaking through? Probably not.
That is a very good point. Since December 27th, Alex Tuck is 6th in the NHL in goals. 25 goals in his last 42 games.
Nobody would say that.
Nope. And his teammate Tage Thompson is tied for 3rd. 27 goals in 41 games. Tied with Alex Ovechkin and Jason Robertson. It's one of the more, I guess, bigger, which leads to a bigger question here, Mike. You look at what the Sabres might do this offseason. Do they need anything at forward based on what we've seen the last few weeks with Josh Norris coming back, Jordan Greenway coming back, Jason Zucker got re-signed? You see some of the younger players that have gotten opportunity that have earned Lindy Ruff's trust, Kozak, Oslin, depth. You know, you're going to have some depth in Rochester. Do they need to do anything up front, in your opinion?
Everybody goes on and on and on and on and on. Oh, they need another top 6 forward. Well, first of all, I don't think they do. Secondly, they did add another top 6 forward. His name is Josh Norris.
That's their ad.
That's their top 6 forward ad. It's Josh Norris. And the whole thing about Skinner became moot when McLeod and Zucker blew Skinner's stats away anyway. You don't know what's going to happen next year with Kozak. You don't know what's going to happen next year with Osland. Your top six add is Josh Norris. This offseason is about figuring out a right-handed partner and more physicality and such on the defense, and about figuring out what you're going to do in goal. Is UPL's crummy season an outlier, or is it what he is? Is Devin Levi going to carry the Amerks deep and be ready to be in the NHL next year? Is he not? Is James Reimer coming back? Is he going somewhere else? Is he going home? We don't know. He's 37 years old. He's already said he's got to talk to his family. Are they going to sign or trade for somebody else? That's what Kevin Adams has got to do. Everybody talking about forwards. They're one of the top scoring teams in the league with a lousy power play. Imagine if they had a good power play. So, no. Defense, goaltending. They already got their top six forward. You forget. They got it. His name is Josh Norris.
It's also going to be the summer of the contract extension, perhaps. Oof. It might be. They have some very important restricted free agents. J.J. Paterka, Ryan McLeod are among that group. But
Number 89.
That's what I was getting at. On July 1st, Alex Tuch is going to be eligible to sign a contract extension. He has only 1 year left, Mike. Now, if the price on that contract extension, here's a hypothetical for you. Alex Tuch is getting closer to 29 years old. If he wants an 8-year contract at between $7 and $8 million, do you do it? Because you might have to overpay, you know,
I do it because the cap is going up.
Same.
It's not going to push on your total cap. He's proven he can score. He's proven he's multifaceted. He's terrific in the locker room. The community loves him. And again, he has played 66 career playoff games. He has played in multiple conference finals. He has played in a Stanley Cup final. You need that kind of experience in your locker room. For the first time, when the Sabres finally make the playoffs, God only knows when, the first game when Rasmus Dahlin is out there and Tage Thompson is out there and all these other guys who've never been in the playoffs are out there, you've got Alex Tuch. You've got Bowen Byram and Ryan McLeod who've been in Stanley Cup finals. Byram won a cup if they keep him. It's another whole story. But, yeah, I think Alex Tuch's long-term prospects obviously are taking a big boost from this season, but you know, the guy grew up wearing the goat head. His first press conference, he started rattling off names of Finneganoff and Campbell and Jochen Hecht and Ryan Miller. And, you know, he escorted Rick Jenneret on the ice. I mean, if you don't want that guy in the Buffalo Sabres, I don't know what I can say to you.
Yeah. Bo Byram put it perfectly to me on Thursday morning when I asked him about Tuch. Tuch has a skill set they just don't have in that locker room. Look at the way that he scores goals. He gets to the front of the net. You know, you can have all the skill in the world on your team, but if you don't have different types of players, you don't stand a chance to actually win when it matters. And he's somebody he scores the net front goals and those tips the way that Reinhardt did. He defends at an elite level. The speed, the combination of, you know, the size, the physicality that he really brings. You have to pay that guy. I don't care. And that I would prioritize a contract extension for him long term over JJ Paterka.
Right. And
I
Tuch
would.
Has the different Tuch types has of the hands. Tuch has the hands too. In tight. Yep. He can score the tips. Then you put him on a breakaway and he just makes some of these goalies look silly.
He's almost automatic in shootouts.
Right. Automatic in shootouts. Most of these guys are good at one or the other. Yeah, this guy is good at in tight with tips and breakaways. I like JJ Paterka a lot. I think he's an elite skill set also. And, you know, it's great that they got him in the second round. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's in the pecking order. Alex Tuch's ahead of JJ Paterka in the pecking order on my book for sure.
Yeah, different skill set. You can't. It's very difficult to find guys like Alex Tuch. That's why so many teams were calling Kevin Adams leading up to the deadline, saying would you move him? And no, Kevin Adams would not move him. Last topic, Mike. The Atlantic Division is getting really interesting when it comes to the playoff teams. Now the Ottawa Senators, their playoff drought is over. So Dylan Cousins and Dennis Gilbert are headed to the Stanley Cup.
They're playoff. Not very good.
I don't think they are either.
No.
The Montreal Canadiens strengthen their chances, of course. They've got an 8-point lead over Detroit, but it's just very interesting. And, you know, you look at the top of the division, suddenly Toronto's in first place. The Leafs are going to be in Buffalo on Tuesday night. The Sabres have a big weekend back to back. They play the Panthers on Saturday and the Lightning on Sunday. And those two teams, they badly need wins because everybody wants to get first place. Nobody wants to end up in third place in that division. It's just a matter of fact. So as much as you could sit here and say, oh, they don't have any, no, they have a lot to play for over the last week of the season.
You know, Lance, you're really killing me in this podcast. You started off getting me agitated. Now you're going to finish getting me agitated because the Sabres play three in a row against the Atlantic Division, Florida, Tampa, Toronto. How about this scenario? The Leafs have not won a division title in a full season since 2000. They could wrap up the Atlantic Division title Tuesday night in KeyBank Center in front of all their adoring fans. How sickening a scene would that be?
Yeah.
It'd be really bad, especially given how well the Sabres have played at home in the last 15 games. The Leafs, I picked the Leafs for the year to win this division. I'm not surprised they're going to. The Panthers have had injuries and haven't really pushed hard lately. I don't think the Panthers care a whole lot about winning this division. Part of me says the Panthers wouldn't mind dropping to the wild card and playing the Leafs in round one because they think it's the best matchup for them.
Yeah, the Panthers just want to get healthy.
They just got to get healthy. You know, the game Wednesday night in Tampa may have decided the division. It was a terrific game. The Leafs won in overtime on a goal by Matthew Knies, and the overtime was unbelievable. I mean, the goaltending was terrific with Bobrovsky and Anthony Stolarz, and the Leafs won it. Both teams had chances. The Leafs now have four games left with a three-point lead. And the one thing about it is, even if you're the Leafs and you win the division, well, what does that mean for the Leafs? That means they win the division and their reward is going to be playing the Ottawa Senators, which not an easy first-round pick.
It'd be a fun series for everybody watching. Those teams do not like
Brady Tkachuk will go haywire at least twice in that series for sure.
Yep.
But I think it's interesting to me that the team most confident in what they're doing, and they're not hopeful. The Florida Panthers know what they are. They've been to two straight Stanley Cup finals. They're just in get-ready mode right now. And they don't care if they don't have home ice advantage in the first round or not. They don't really care if they play the Lightning. I certainly don't think they care if they play the Leafs or not. They might prefer to play the Leafs. But Toronto needs to avoid those first two rounds of playing Florida and Tampa back-to-back. So it's real important they win the division, get through beating Ottawa, then you only have to worry about one of the Florida teams. And we could see that moment. And like I said, the Leafs haven't won a division in 25 years. It could come Tuesday night in Buffalo.
With a win on Thursday night, the Sabres would have as many as Detroit, which is ninth in the Eastern Conference. So it just, yeah, I mean, if the Sabres keep this up and they keep winning, like, they might end up being just right out of the playoffs, you know, in the big
picture.
They
were 16 points behind Columbus. They've cut the deficit to Columbus from 16 points to 3 in a month. Yeah, you're right. The Sabres could end up passing everybody. They could end up passing the Rangers, passing Columbus, passing the Islanders, and being, you know, the first team out again if they keep winning. It's just really crazy for as long as they were in last place.
What a weird season. That's all I really have to say about that point. What a weird season.
You know? I'm still getting over the own goal in Utah. I may never get over that. I don't know how the players get over that. I was thankfully not in nose into my laptop writing. I was looking up when that happened. I saw the puck go down the ice. I'm still trying to figure that whole situation out.
Alex Nedeljkovic's goalie goal,
right?
A winless streak. We could just keep going on and on. All right, Mike. Hey, let's we'll do it again next week before the season wraps and we have locker clean out stuff and the end of season wrap. But he's Mike Harrington. I'm Lance Lysowski. Thanks for tuning in. As always, this is Ice Time, the Buffalo News Hockey Podcast. And take care. We'll see you guys soon.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at expresswindowsinc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.